I'm Heather of Tangled Meat Crafts.
And this is Jessie of A Polar Night, and together we are the Not-So-Crafty Gorgons.
Hey, girl. Hey.
Hi.
So, speaking of girls, because I love any opportunity to segue into anything. Right? That's how that works, right? We're going to be talking about the Gedea girls. Yeah, so I actually discovered them while we were researching for our feminist movements episode, feminist crafts stuff. But before we get into the topic of our episode, you want to talk about what you're working on right now?
Yes, I'd love to. I've been actually doing wire wrap stuff again. So we've talked about it on Shrieking in the She Shed, which if you do not subscribe to our Patreon, you want to, because we are very raw and open, and you're going to hear about stuff on there first, frankly. Just what's going on with us day-to-day, our works in progress, as well as my ongoing medical struggles, which I'm going to address publicly, I think, for the first time. So next week, and by the time this is released, I think that it will long since have happened, but next week I am heading down for a surgical consult to get my pituitary adenoma hopefully removed or dealt with in some capacity, be that surgery or radiation. So working on that. So in the meantime, you know, I've been having pain in my hands, and it's why I've kind of backed off on a lot of my heavier duty metal work and things like that. Well, leading up, frankly, it's going to sound weird, I want my hands to be swollen like I've been working, and it sucks and they hurt, but I just kind of said, well, you know what? I'm about to be seen by the doctor. Let's just go all in. And so when I work on metal and stuff, my hands swell up. But it's actually been weirdly not as bad as I was expecting. And I've been actually able to work on some things and been finding a lot of joy in that work again. So I've been making some earrings and some pendants and things. I'm also getting my online shop back up, so I will be working with Alaska Sourced. They're still in the process of their launch with getting all Alaskan-based artisans, and it's going to be like a platform where they kind of push traffic towards us, and we push traffic back towards them, so it's just a group of artists that are working together to kind of give each other traffic and get some local artists supported.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm really glad you're going that route with them. I also just like thinking about what you're talking about with your hands and like it not being as bad as you were expecting. I think that goes back to like repetitive stress injuries, right? Where it's like when you're crocheting like the tennis elbow, right? Where it's like, I think you've taken such a long break, it's probably not as bad as the last time you were wrapping.
And I've been, like, part of the reason why I've been surprised is actually my nerve pain. So growth hormone causes some of the problems that I've been, like, for instance, for years I've woken up with my hands and my feet going numb. And had, like, some neuropathy going on. And apparently growth hormone causes that. So that makes more sense now. Because for years I've just been like, well, this can't be normal, but no one has an answer for me about why. So that's actually been worse recently. But the actual, like, arthritis type pain right now isn't as bad. It's more the, like, deep nerve pain and the bone pain and stuff has been worse. But that's not really impacted by any activity. It's just kind of, it's either there or it's not.
It's there, yeah.
So, yeah, I think you're right. It's just taking the break made the arthritis type of joint pain a little bit better, and now that I'm coming back into it, it's almost like a reset. So yeah. I think that's a really good point.
Well, hopefully your doctor's appointments go well and you get some good closure to this long journey.
It's been like 2 years of just trying to get them to do anything, because I'm not a textbook case, and that's not their fault at all. Like, it's weird that, like, they do a test called...
Well, maybe they should write the textbook now.
But they do a test called an oral glucose tolerance test, and that should tell you if your growth hormone's out of range. Well, mine came back wonky. Like, it was, like, suppressed like it should have been, and the last reading it went out of range, which isn't normal. So it was normal, but then it wasn't, which is not how that test would typically go with anybody. So we're redoing that one, for instance. So I'm a weird in-between case, and to be fair to my doctors, that's a weird thing to deal with, and you absolutely don't want to just jump in and start treating something if you don't know what you're looking at. So I think that's, it's fair, but it's also been frustrating for me to be like, I would like this fixed now. But yeah, so I'm going to hopefully one way or the other, be doing more crafting stuff. So I'm excited about that. And to just feel more like myself in that regard.
Yeah. Well, and even just, like, the brain fog you've talked about and just how incapacitating, like, the mental aspect of what you've been dealing with has been.
Yeah, and that's been a thing where, you know, I work my day job because it has really good health benefits. Like, straight up, that's why I have my job, and it's been really tough. It's been tough to be like, you know, I need the job for the health insurance, but the job is hard to do because I feel like a potato sometimes. Like, straight up, I'm like, you could use my brain to power a clock today, and that's about all I've got.
Yeah, and it's very bureaucratic work, too, which isn't exactly playing to your strengths as a human.
Yeah, that's where I've just been like, you know, if I didn't need the health insurance so bad, or I don't know, I just, it makes me stressed out because I don't always feel like I'm great at my job, but I need to do it so that I can get these benefits. And it's just this, like, really interesting catch-22.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I'm excited to be back into creative endeavors, and I think that, honestly, from the brain fog perspective, it's better for me to be playing to my strengths, which is more emotional and creative, so hopefully we can open some more doors in that direction as I can hopefully get more energy and more mental capacity back.
Yeah, and I know there's been a lot of questions that I've fielded about your kits, your embroidery kits. And that I throw at you about your embroidery kit.
So I have, like, 6 of them that are technically finished. I just haven't done the, like, the PDF part. And I think it's so funny that I'm, like, looking at these kits and I'm like, I think these are pre-sold now.
Pretty much. You got a line waiting for you. For those of you who don't know, I have never actually legitimately embroidered anything. So I'm saving my virginal embroidery experience for these kits. This kit specifically. So... get on that train. Hop on that booty train and get rolling.
Woo. I'm working on it.
Not you, them. Them.
Oh.
I feel like the more pressure you have to do it, the more likely it's not going to happen. Because it'll be overwhelmingly crushing.
Well, like the thing where I needed to get stuff into my CPA for the last, like, I don't know, 4 months. And, like, we got an extension on our taxes. So, like, it wasn't due till October. But I finally just went, like, I need this off my plate. And so the next thing on the list has been, like, finishing the PDF. And so I'm like, okay, well, we have the thing in front of it that took me. So I just need, like, another 4 months. It's fine. We'll just
four months.
This
is it.
I'll just hit a day where I'm like, we need to just do this.
It'll be in time for spring, though, which is great. So perfect timing.
And my website's all set to post them. So that's the other thing. I did all the back-end stuff. Ooh, so nice. When I'm ready, they will just go up for sale.
I'm excited. I'm super excited. I can't wait. As evidenced by me constantly asking you, hey, how are those going? I'm so ready.
Are you working on them? Is it done?
Because I don't have enough things to hyperfixate on. Other crafts I'm, like, learning. So,
well, and that's the other thing too, is once I get this initial PDF done, it's the basis for all of the future ones, so future designs will be easier. And I just, this is, it's just a, it's one of those lovely little neurodivergent things where I'm like, we're just having some issues with getting this one done. It's fine, it will get done. It's just I'm at the point where I have to add a couple more bits to it, and then it'll be boom, ready to go. And I'm also trying to decide if I'm just giving the PDF for the sake of saving paper, or if I'm going to go get them printed, and how I'm going to handle that, so.
I wonder if you could give, I have no idea, but could you give them an option?
I could, yeah, I absolutely could.
And just pay extra for the hand physical copy.
Yeah, and I think, I'm wondering if also, because I have a laser printer at my house, if I just do the printed copies in black and white, just so if you want the physical copy, but also you'll have the PDF so you can actually see the color. So I have to make some decisions. So actually, if you're listening and you have any suggestions, I'm sure I would not have touched it by the time this episode comes out. So feel free to tell me what you think about, like, PDF versus physical copy, and if you would need it to be in color, or if you could extrapolate from looking at the photo.
Mm. Interesting. So, yeah, I've been knobbending or learning how to knobbind. Patreon public human beings, if you knobbend and you say it differently, please, like, do a video of yourself or, like, a sound bite of yourself pronouncing it and email it to us.
But Heather, what is it?
It's like Viking knitting with one needle.
Oh, wow. That sounds so interesting. I already know what it is, but because Heather has a special interest dumped on me about it, and I love it, and I'm here for it.
I have this amazing human being in my life named Charlie, and he is exceptionally skilled at so many different things and kindly offered to allow me to come visit with him, and he taught me how to start knobbending a hat. And I'm really excited because I finally got, like, the tension stuff figured out. So now I'm at the point of, like, figuring out how to felt the pieces of yarn or wool together. So that's exciting. But my goal long-term is to, like, get expert level on knoll bending and start teaching classes to the community. So bring the awareness and the love for the art back.
Yeah.
But my real goal is to also raise the sheep and then shear the sheep and then prep the wool and then spin the yarn and then knoll bend with it and then just be a Viking goddess.
Okay. Yep.
Yep.
I see it.
Yep. Complete with my Viking metal music and my 4-year-old head banging in the background. It's going to be great. So, yeah. And then I took a class for sewing with the feed sacks, which was interesting. But I'll talk about that on a Patreon episode. So, we're going to be talking about the Gedea girls, speaking of art, because that's literally the point of this podcast.
So, I know nothing about this, by the way. Heather handed me a book, and she's like, here, you can look at this while I talk. And I'm like, cool. So, I'm coming in with, this is going to be a lot of me being like, oh, really? So, tell us more. How do you feel about that, Heather? So I'm just here as support person today, while Heather's going to enlighten all of us.
All right. So the Gedea girls is something I discovered while doing research for our Crafts in the Feminist Movements episode. And they were, like, mentioned as a, like, little blurb, like a 2-sentence blurb in a history of women in art, right? And so I took that, and then I found another book in the library that was literally published by this group of women, or by this organization of women. And I'm really pissy that our art history classes, at least the ones I took in college, and I was not an art major, so, like, let me couch that of, like, I did not take every art class ever. But, like, the basic art history class that I had to take is, like, to become a well-rounded human being with education. Did not cover them at all. Like, there was no discussion of this group. And essentially, they started in 1985 as an anonymous group. I can language. An anonymous group of feminist female artists devoted to fighting sexism and racism within the art world. The group formed in New York City in 1985 with the mission of bringing gender and racial inequality into focus within the greater art community. That was in quotes from the book.
Cool.
I'll cite them. Don't sue us, please. Sorry. Plagiarism! But basically, what was going on was these non-cis, non-white, non-men people were getting upset because all these art galleries were hyper-focusing on men. They were displaying men, specifically white men. And they started taking stats to see what their representation looked like in these different museums. And so they ended up sending out these, like, letters. Telegraphs. It looked like a telegraph. They started sending these telegraphs to these different museums and saying, hey, get your shit together. Start showing more women or we're going to out you. Start showing more people of color or we're going to out you. And sure enough, museums were like, haha, whatever. And then the Gedea girls started posting stuff all over New York with, like, hey, guess what? This is the list of all the museums that don't show women. This is all the museums that don't show people of color. These are all the collectors who don't show them. And so it was a really interesting, like, rabbit hole to go down because they ended up calling themselves the conscience of the art world and calling out a bunch of crazy stuff happening within the art world. And for me, as somebody who's, like, never really been a part of the art world, right? It was just kind of like, oh shit, let's spill the tea, bitches. Like, they were getting a lot of stuff. So, like, when Epstein hit, they were really prolific on that. I'll talk about that in a minute. But, Jesse, do you, since you've been more plugged into the art world, do you have any, like, thoughts on representation in museums and what's that looked like, especially since you went to art school and have gone to all these museums?
Yeah, so I, as you were talking, I was thinking, you know, you had your formative years and your education in Texas, and my formative years and my education were in Massachusetts, which are very different states politically. Yes. By, like, a lot. You know, Massachusetts is extremely liberal. The area that I lived in, like, it's interesting because it's, like, Boston and then that whole 91 Connecticut River Valley corridor, or the Pioneer Valley, as it's called, is very liberal. I grew up not too far from Northampton, Mass., which is honestly arguably the lesbian epicenter of the U.S.
Like, that's awesome.
Straight up, like, I mean, it's very, very liberal. Smith College is located in Northampton, which has historically been an all-women's college, and they have an art museum there. So a lot of the art education that I had, including my art history 2 class, occurred actually at Smith. And then we also did a lot of trips to that museum. And that museum is very focused on diversity. Even many of the historical pieces are by women and people of color. So I feel like my experience has been skewed by that a little bit. Sure. In that, like, when people talk about there not being representation, for me, my experience is that there is a lot of representation. It's probably still not enough, like, honestly, like, right. Straight up, even when I think places try to put an emphasis, it's hard because, like, for instance, historically, we talked about this a little bit, women artists until a certain point had to almost be, like, put forth by another male artist. Right, like, they had, like, to be supported.
Chaperoned or,
yeah,
like, sponsored, yeah.
So they just don't exist in the same way. Like, even in New England, like, there's a few artists that I can think of that did very early, like, landscapes. They're men, they're not women. There's a few artists that, like, I'm trying to think of names and things, and I can actually, I can add things for the notes later that are specific, but, like, there's artists of color that were very specifically doing art at that time, and there's a few pieces at the Smith Art Gallery that I, again, will, I'll include that in the notes, actually, so that you can see kind of some of the pieces. So I grew up with that, but even then, like, architecture, for instance, I love architecture history, predominantly men. Not that there aren't women that were involved in that process, but they just either weren't mentioned, were overshadowed, and it was largely a man's game.
Yeah, it's super interesting that you emphasize that it was the Smith Museum, because one of the things that the Gidea girls talk about in their different campaigns is how there's, like, 70-something% of students are, or 70-something% of the art students are female, but those exhibited in, like, the big museums, like the Met or the Museum of Modern Art, are mostly male, and one of their big campaigns was, where they put out this big yellow banner showing a nude model, essentially, with a gorilla mask with the phrase, "Do women have to be naked to get into the Met Museum?" And it listed the stats of less than 5% of the artists in the modern art sections are women, but 85% of the nudes are female.
Wow.
And so, like, just that juxtaposition of, women are all over the museum, just not in the capacity as creator. Which is kind of interesting. And then they did, at one point in one of their campaigns, talk about how, like, smaller museums in, like, regional-type settings, so, like, the university museums or, like, city and county museums are very much, like, yes, the diversity is represented. Yes, local artists are represented. But when you start getting to those big names, not so much. And they've done international stuff, too, so it's not just, like, shitting on America. But it's definitely been interesting.
The other thing that kind of strikes me that as I'm thinking about things, you know, because I have been to multiple, like, there's just been multiple times in my life where galleries were a part of my, like, weekly experience, you know, being an art student and living in an area with a lot of galleries, like going up to Brattleboro and going and doing, like, the gallery crawls. or like hanging out in Northampton and going to all the galleries there, even going to Boston, hitting up the galleries there and going to the museum. There seems to be less, and this might be my, this is my opinion and this is what I've noticed. I feel like when money is involved, because galleries are skewed towards sales.
Yeah.
Galleries exist to sell. Like, yeah, you can go in and, you know, have some wine and some cheese and chat with people, but the artist is usually present on, like, you know, gallery crawl nights and things, and they'll talk to people. They're trying to sell you art. And by and large, I've noticed that the museums are more open to diversity. The galleries are looking for the people that can schmooze and that they can put in front of people. And frankly, I don't think that they typically put women or people of color in front of crowds like that. I'm sure, like, I know that they do. I've seen it. It's not like that's impossible, but I just feel like there's way less representation in the gallery space that involves sales.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, because one of the other things that, because I did a really deep dive on the Yidia girls, one of the other things I noticed in some of their campaigns talks about, like, that tokenism in the gallery setting, and how when there are Black artists or other persons of color or women, they either get fetishized and, like, people start talking about, like, oh, it's always been a fantasy of mine to, like, have a threesome with an Asian artist or whatever. So rather than focusing on the art itself, it becomes, oh, you are a token Asian person, and I'm going to talk to you as if you represent all Asian cultures and ignore the fact that, like, Asia is a continent and not a culture.
I mean, we even see that historically with women who were artists. Like, people talk about their lives almost more than they talk about their art, mm-hmm. or their motivations and things, whereas male artists, their art feels like it's respected on its face. You don't necessarily always know the details of their personal life, but with women, you're talking about their sex life. Who were they dating?
Yeah.
Who were they? Like, what did they do in their personal life? Where did they live? You don't always necessarily know that with a male artist.
Yep. That was exactly one of the things that they talked about in that tokenism campaign, was it's like, you have a male artist and you know the art he's known for. You have a female artist and you know what kind of person she sleeps with, who she slept with, what her, like, mental health status is, you know, all these other things that you don't necessarily know about the artist that's a male.
Just because I know there's probably... I don't think most of our audience would even argue with that. I think most people. But for the ones who want to argue that, Frida Kahlo, Georgia O'Keeffe. I'm just, you know, for photography people, Francesca Woodman. What do we know about her? She killed herself. Like, that's literally what most people don't even know what her art... Like, maybe they can picture, like, one of her mirror photos. But, like, she's known for having killed herself, not necessarily just for her art.
Yeah. So, interestingly enough, in the 80s, they came out with a code of ethics for art museums that I thought was really interesting. And so, I'm going to go through these 10 commandments. Thou shalt not be a museum trustee and also the chief stockholder of a major auction house. A curator shalt not exhibit an artist or the artists of a dealer with whom he, she has had a sexual relationship, unless such a liaison is explicitly stated on a wall label 8 inches from the exhibited work. Thou shalt not give more than 3 retrospectives, which I don't know what that means, to an artist whose dealer is the brother of the chief curator. Now, like, at this point, I feel like they're specifically talking about something and someone in specific that has happened. I just don't know enough of the art world to, like, have any context for that. Thou shalt not limit thy board of trustees to corporate officers, wealthy entrepreneurs, and social hangers-on. Like, Trump is somewhere in here. Somewhere. At least 2% must be artists representing the racial and gender percentages of the U.S. populations. Thou shalt not permit corporations to launder their public images in museums until they cleaneth up their toxic waste dumps and oil slicks. Thou shalt provide lavish funerals for women and artists of color who thou planneth to exhibit only after their death. Okay. I thought that was an interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
If thou art an art collector sitting on the acquisitions or exhibitions committee, thou shalt useth thy influence to enhance the value of thine own collection not more than once a year.
Okay.
Thy corporate benefactors who earneth their income from products for women and people of color shalt earmark their museum donations for exhibits and acquisitions of art by those groups. thou shalt keepeth curatorial salaries so low that curators must be independently wealthy or willing to engage in insider trading. Okay. Thou shalt admit to the public that words such as genius, this one's my favorite, genius, masterpiece, seminal, potent, tough, gritty, and powerful are used solely to prop up the myth and inflate the market value of white male artists. I like those commandments. I thought they were very fun. But I also am like, what was going on in the 80s? So, a lot of cocaine.
I mean, watch any media from the 80s and just watch the rant. Like, good example. I watched Doogie Howser for the first time, and I was like, wow. Like, right out of the gate, it is wild. It is wild to see just, like, casual sexism and casual, like, the number, like, twice already. I watched two episodes. Doogie, who is a teenager, has already been hit on by two women over the age of at least 25.
That's so fucking gross.
Yeah, and women are just very clearly seen as being, I don't even know. It's just
sexual predators.
Yeah, basically.
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
But no, just like the women are there for sexuality, and that's the extent of it. And it's very upsetting. And I'm like, oh, okay, like. This was a family-friendly show, too, so, the 80s, man, wild.
Yeah, and I think about, like, museums that I see and all those, like, donation bricks or plaques and stuff, and this commandment list makes me wonder about those donors that I see listed, you know what I mean? And, like, I wonder if I jotted down all those donors, what kind of backgrounds they would have, and, like, what kind of, like, political influence they would have. Just, I would be curious about that. Because I donate to our museum here. And I'm, like, the annual member and all that fun stuff. But it's very much, like, I have never contributed to any conversations about exhibitions or what's curated and what's not. That being said, though, we do have a pretty diversely represented museum. So, I don't know if you have any thoughts about the Anchorage Museum.
So, I've only been once, and really? We were there with a child, yeah. So, I've been there. I can't say I've seen much, but I feel like the Anchorage Museum is, rightfully so, largely Indigenous.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. As it should be, frankly. And I'm sure people will disagree with me on that, and that's fine. But, like, it's...
Well, and the thing is, like, they do have, like, local artists who, like, I've seen white artists represented. I've seen white photographers represented. And then they do, like, a huge, when the Black Lives Matters protests were getting really big, they had a whole wing just dedicated to Black artists of Alaska, which, granted, like, the argument could be made as this tokenism, like, why didn't it exist before, but at least they did something. But, yeah, I feel like they have a lot of female representation as well in general.
Yeah, I think... from what I remember of seeing of names and things, like, there were some interesting ones that were definitely, I think the artists were women.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm actually having a hard time thinking of anything. Yeah, I think all the displays that I remember were attached to female artists. But, I mean, that's also because my interests are going to probably skew towards...
like, the beadwork and stuff like that.
Yeah, and there was also, like, some interesting political pieces that were... clearly spearheaded by women, some anti-war stuff and some really interesting other pieces.
Yeah.
And also just, again, like, looking at the different historical Native displays and things and stuff like that I guess it's not really gendered, but, like, they just have a huge space for that in a way that other museums just kind of don't. Like, I've been to, you know, we had the Heritage Center up in Barrow, and their sister museums are whaling museums. And obviously a lot of the stuff there is either going to be borrowed or, but, like, there's an even mix of, like, industrial whaling from the New England area. Yeah. And then there's also, like, they trade materials so that they can also show the difference between indigenous traditional whaling and commercialized, like, whaling.
And then, like, the Japanese whaling and all of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen some really cool stuff with those. Yeah. So... the Gidea Girls have really expanded since their inception in 1985. They hit their 30th anniversary in 2015, and so they're now, like, 38 years old, 37. But essentially, they have done a lot of work on political decisions impacting housing and public assistance. So they've done a lot of art calling things out on that front, especially since women, people of color, and children are the most likely to be impacted by the functions of those programs. They've done campaigns on war and how war gets funded and defense gets funded, and how women get treated in those spheres and how people of color gets treated in those spheres in comparison to how they get treated in, like, the art world. So not saying that one gets worse or better, but it's just an interesting comparison in general. They also do a lot on abortion rights, and have done, like, that one that you're looking at right now. I don't know if you can read to them what it says.
So I'm going to read the little blurb here first. Our first billboard appeared in Manhattan during the congressional fight over public funding of an exhibition of sexually explicit photographs by Robert Mapplethorpe. We connected right-wing attempts to censor art with right-wing attacks on women's reproductive rights. We had absolutely nothing to do with the ad that ran next to it, which is a Toyota body part ad. But the one that they put up was says, first they want to take away a woman's right to choose, now they're censoring art.
Yep. And they've done a lot of different abortion rights stuff. They also do environmental issues. If you flip through, at some point you'll encounter, like, a green piece of art with a banana sticking out of it. I like their collaging type work. I really like their use of different media, to be honest.
They've definitely, a lot of it feels very reminiscent of pop art in a really just, oh, I love that. I love that they've just taken that, because especially one of the things that they do allude to early on, and it's something that is a point of discussion in the art world now. I do love Andy Warhol. Everyone knows that I am crazy about Andy Warhol, but his studio was a machine, and he had a lot of people employed under him that actually did the work, and many of them were women, and many of them are uncredited. Many of them...
I did not know that.
Yeah. So, I mean, most of his work was just mass-produced stuff. He had people just kind of hanging out in the studio doing stuff. He also did create opportunities for women, so I don't want to slam Andy Warhol by any means, because, you know, a lot of that is just a product of the time and a product of the type of work that was happening. Mm-hmm. But there were women who did artwork in that studio who did not go on to any level of success. And there was also people that dipped in and out. I mean, it was just a wild time and place, but but he also did, you know, do movies and things, and Nico, for instance, was kind of discovered by Andy Warhol. Oh. She went on to work with the Velvet Underground, who he managed at that point. So, you know, it's not like he didn't give any women opportunities, but there is something to be said for, well, most of his work wasn't, after a certain point, wasn't even done by him necessarily. It was mass produced.
Right. Yeah, and just kind of going back to the environmental issues, that was actually, like, the one that I felt called out on, because their campaign on that, like, it's this green image with, like, white, right there, with, like, white pieces of paper, and it's in it's basically a plastic bag with, like, trash coming out of it with a banana peel, especially, and it has these little blurbs, and one of them is about, like, using disposable diapers, because it's easier or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, parenting has been really freaking hard, and I have not had capacity to do reusable diapers. So it's interesting how expansive their work has gotten to be, and how it relates to, like, environmentalism in the art world and, like, that social responsibility. We can't just say, oh, everything is white people's fault or white men's fault. Like, yes, there's definitely issues related to race, ethnicity, gender, but, like, everybody is also being problematic with the environment right now.
Yep.
So, and then fair wage issues for artists and employees at galleries and museum, kind of hitting on what you were talking about with Andy Warhol, and then assessments of museums and representation internationally. So they've had stuff in Hong Kong, they've had stuff in Brazil, they've had stuff in trying to remember, I know there was one in India, they've had stuff in Canada, so they've been all over. And then they make recommendations to art museums for labels to call out things like sexual predation by artists. So, like, Chuck Close got called out for sexually abusing and assaulting art students that worked with him and models that worked with him. And it was just kind of interesting because he's also the one who did the official portrait of President Bill Clinton, or former President Bill Clinton. Whatever you're supposed to say about those guys. But now, so if you, like, go on their website, which we'll include that in their show notes, they describe themselves as, "The Giddy Girls are anonymous artist activists who use disruptive headlines, outrageous visuals, and killer statistics to expose gender and ethnic bias and corruption in art, film, politics, and pop culture. We believe in an intersectional feminism that fights for human rights for all people. We undermine the idea of mainstream narrative by revealing the understory, the subtext, the overlooked, and the downright unfair. We have done hundreds of projects, such as street posters, banners, actions, books, and videos all over the world. We also do interventions and exhibitions at art museums, blasting them on their walls, on their own walls, for their bad behavior and discriminatory practices, including a stealth projection on the facade of the Whitney Museum about income inequality and the super rich hijacking art. Our retrospectives and traveling exhibitions have attracted thousands. Our new book, Giddy Girls, The Art of Behaving Badly, which is the one in your hands right now, collects hundreds of our projects from 85 to 2020. And was named one of the best art books of 2020 by the New York Times and LA Times. Recently, our work was at Tate Modern and Whitechapel Gallery, London, Sao Paulo Museum of Art, the Venice Biennial, Biennale? I don't know how to say that. The Van Gogh Museum, Amsterdam, Museum of Military History, which is really interesting. I'd love to see what they put there. Dresden, Art Basel, Hong Kong, and many other places. Our motto, do one thing. If it works, do another. If it doesn't, do another anyway. Keep chipping away. And I really like their website. I like their shop. I bought some stuff from their shop, so I'm waiting for my own gorilla mask to come in. Yeah. And some stickers that I'm going to totally do some Giddy work. But why I really like them is because it jives so well with some of the giddiest stuff I've been doing, with, like, the little cross stitches that I've been putting out since the Roe v. Wade stuff came out. So, yeah. What are your thoughts and feelings?
I honestly don't know enough about it to have much of a... I mean, I've actually been surprised at the number of things I've been able to jump in on, just from... I always forget that I actually have an education in art.
It's wild!
It's amazing the stuff that you forget that you know. But one of the things I'm actually looking at right now, and I was like, oh, this is an interesting, just the variety of things that they're saying and the variety of causes that they seem to be covering here. This one is actually top 10 signs that you're being tokenized, mm-hmm. putting it directly to the marginalized person, which is mind-blowing, that I'm like, oh, also bringing awareness to the individuals that you would want to be helping, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very in your face. Like, everything they do is very much in your face.
And it's not comfortable. No. It's like, nothing here is comfortable.
No. But I really like it. I like the contrast in the colors that they're using. I like the collaging techniques they've used. Everything is very eye-catching and almost a little, like, sensory overload, like, in your face. But I think that's what they're wanting to accomplish, you know?
Yeah.
Listeners, we'd love to hear what you think. And if you've heard of the Giddy Girls, I'm actually getting the Giddy Girls activity book for when you go to museums to give to some friends for Christmas. Because I'm like, ah, they jive with this. So, yeah, if you guys have heard of them or look into them and have any interest, we'd love to hear your thoughts.
I was just sitting here Googling, like, women's art museums, and the only one I could find is apparently in D.C. and is temporarily closed. And there is a women's, like, a natural history museum of women's art.
Wow.
But they're temporarily closed. And I was also thinking about places where I've seen predominantly women's work, and honestly, the textile museum. Because, like we talked about, like, textile arts have been something that women are allowed to participate in.
Right.
But I'm also thinking about other things I learned about in, like, art history or other personal interests. Like, learning about Disney and the way that it originally treated the inkers, you know, the women that would color in the, yes. the cell art, and how very little they got paid, how very little rights they had, and basically if you complained, they'd just replace you with someone else. Or thinking about, where is it? Photography with women in the beginning was very much seen as a men's, because it was very technical and it was very, you know, like, exacting, and women weren't really welcome into anything that was mechanical. There were women who still did, of course, but, like, it wasn't something that we were welcomed into. So I'm just trying to think of, like, places where I've seen women's art, and really it just has been in, like, textile museums or crafting museums. And a lot of the time when you're in, like, a photography, like, they point out, like, woman artist, like, it's like almost like they point out that the person is female, they point out that the person is black.
Yeah.
And I can't, I'm sure that I've I don't know that I've ever actually seen like a trans or very clearly like outside of like gay males, like I don't think I've seen many people that were LGBTQ in museums, aside from, again, like, gay males. Like, mm-hmm. I just, it's not something that's really, yeah. Like, I mean, Smith, obviously, like, I know that they've had student shows by people that were LGBTQ, but in terms of, like, art museums, like, I just haven't seen much.
Yeah.
Have they covered any LGBTQ trans issues in recent years that we know of?
I'm sure they have, because they also covered stuff like the O.J. Simpson and when Anna Mendieta, so she's the photographer who did the rape scene.
Okay.
Her husband killed her. And so they covered how you have this woman of color who's been murdered by her partner, almost no press coverage, and yet they're both famous artists. You have this white woman get murdered by her ex, O.J. Simpson, and ample news coverage. And it's just, so they call things out like that.
Okay.
And then they've also, so like they've been all over, so I would not be surprised. I don't remember anything in specific related to that. But they do talk about LGBTQ artists in general as, like, they need more representation. I don't know that they've done any of the big political stuff, though, that they've done with, like, racism and gender. But yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I'm going to, after we get off, I'm going to look that up.
Yeah, no, they have a couple books out and a couple different things at the library. So I would, if I were y'all, I would either buy the book or go to the library and check it out, because it's definitely interesting.
Yeah. So,
very visually intense.
Yeah.
So, well, for real, guys, thanks so much. We appreciate you, and we can't wait to hear your thoughts on this episode. Yee! Love y'all. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Not So Crafty Gorgons. We really appreciate your support, and we couldn't do any of this without you, our listeners. Cover art is by Marina Soul Art. Music is by Naveed, who is Amin Me on Fiverr. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review or rating on whatever platform that you prefer. And for exclusive content with the Gorgons, including tutorials, swag, and bonus episodes, subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/notsocraftygorgons. For episode previews and other updates, follow us on Instagram at not_so_crafty_gorgons. We'll be right back.